This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two, Mark Long of the Associated Press is going to join us 40 past the hour. About 35 minutes, we'll talk to him about the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's the team we're focusing on today. We're doing the AFC South this week, so we'll have Tennessee, Houston, and Indianapolis coming up. And while the Jacksonville Jaguars don't enter this season with a huge storyline, other than Doug Peterson is now their new head coach, they're not expected to change the world or anything. We are still looking at Trevor Lawrence and wondering when that sort of NFL-level potential is going to properly be unlocked. He came into this league with all of the boxes checked as far as being the kind of player you'd want at that position. Well, last year wasn't that. He had 17 interceptions that led the league in for rookies and whatnot. And he never had a breakout game. But nevertheless, he still has the size, the arm strength, and the football IQ to be a top-level quarterback down the road. Maybe a little patience, maybe the right coaching, all of those things. But Jacksonville was a team that was mired in more than just a rookie quarterback struggling. It was mired in a bad head coach. And Doug Peterson at least brings in a kind of Super Bowl level coach that can come in and sort of bring in new coaches, new ideas, and get this ship on track. Jacksonville has been a team since its inception that I always found intriguing, because I do remember in the 90s Jacksonville being a hot football town. And everybody sort of was buzzing early before they announced their expansion teams of Jacksonville and Carolina, where the league would go. And there was always a feeling like football in Florida, you got Tampa Bay, you got Miami, but you got this other area of sort of northeast Florida that's red hot for football. It's right there near Florida and Florida State. They love it. Put a team there. But it never really caught on and became sort of a franchise that even when they would lose, people were still very passionate about it. People still were, it was part of their sort of DNA. You see that stadium empty, you see those tarps put up. It's been like that for a long time. A game in London, there always been a team that has been on the, they're going to move to wherever city is hot. It was Los Angeles for many, many years, maybe move to London permanently. They've never been that team that has had such a strong foundation within its own community. I thought Trevor Lawrence, and I still think Trevor Lawrence can change a little bit of that. But remember, this is still a franchise that went to two AFC championship games, still has yet to go to a Super Bowl, but has had some success.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. Here you go for your Monday morning. Yeah, that's right. Get you started the right way. Good, the bad, and the dumb. But before we get to that, it's brought to you by Verizon with their newest unlimited plan. Everyone's welcome. Introducing Welcome Unlimited from Verizon for just $30 a line per month for four lines. With auto pay plus taxes and fees, their best priced unlimited plan ever. For real, $30 a line for the whole family. The network you want, the price you love. Switch to Verizon today. Paper-free billing required. Unlimited 5G nationwide 4G LTE. In times of congestion, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. All smartphone lines on the account must be on Welcome Unlimited and are eligible only for select promotions. Includes domestic talk, text, and data usage only. Data roaming at 2G speeds. What is the good of the day, Ron Culver?
The good of the day. Hasn't really happened yet, but it will be happening soon.
All right.
Now, I will admit, I have not been a religious watcher of The Simpsons for quite some time.
Me either.
You know, I mean, there was a time that, you know, never missed an episode. And that time has long passed.
I think 30 years committed to something on TV is too long.
But it's amazing, too, at the same time that this show has been around for 35 years. But, Tony, and when we find out the actual date, I will be sure to let you all know. Because in the upcoming new season of The Simpsons, they will have an episode explaining how they've been able to predict the future.
Oh, wow!
I am so curious about this.
Wow! That'll be fun.
That would be
fun. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea how they do it. They have not run out of ideas. I mean, they just keep churning them out over and over again.
But then the fact, you know, after 35 years, I mean, some of the things that they predicted or that they've put down on their cartoon was for laughs and giggles. But you looked at it, you're like, whoa, how did that come true?
I know. That's crazy. A lot of them have been amazing. So it's just
so it should be interesting.
Yeah. But Lisa Simpson has not become president after Trump. That was the one thing.
Yeah, they missed the mark on that one, I guess.
But the fact that they landed President Trump was funny. I mean, it's right. Absolutely funny because it was funny back then. And then all of a sudden you're like, he did. Oh, my gosh. But you're right. A pandemic. I mean, everything. It's been wild. This is like a whole bunch of things. It's like a very long list.
Yeah. I mean, you can go. There's a bunch of websites on it. There's 16 of them right here.
16 of them? Wow. That's even more than I thought.
Different ones.
My goodness. So they're going to actually show you how they did it. Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
They were you're right. There were episodes on there that were like the Halloween ones that they did. They were so good. So good. The parodies that they did of horror movies and whatnot. It's amazing that that has been around forever and ever. And you know what it is? When a couple of years ago, FX did this marathon of like we're playing every Simpsons episode, and they were doing it for like, I don't know, 2 weeks or something like that. It was just back to back to back all the episodes. But when I would catch it, I would go, oh, let me watch it. It was almost like a time capsule. Like people that were popular at that particular time, pop cultural phenomenons that were going on, The Simpsons captured it. So you could watch an episode and see like the Arsenio Hall show on TV, you know, and you'd be like, oh, that's from the early 90s. And then you would see something that they would mock that was going on in 1998. You'd see Bill Clinton on there. You'd see like all through the decades. Whatever was kind of popular, The Simpsons sort of mocked it or did something with it or sort of put it, ingrained it into the show. And it became like this sort of, again, this time capsule of, wow, this is really cool.
Well, here's one for you, just for fun, right? This was a 1992 episode,
uh-huh.
Lisa the Greek.
Oh, nice.
Right, where she made a prediction on the Super Bowl. And she said, Washington will win if she still loves her dad, and the Buffalo Bills will prevail if she no longer does.
Oh.
So guess what? Lisa loves her dad.
Lisa loves her dad, yeah.
And this episode aired days before the Super Bowl.
I saw a YouTube video, not to stay on The Simpsons, but this is... I saw a YouTube video where a guy pointed to the episode of The Simpsons that changed Homer for the worse. Because he said there was this writing team, and they had done the early Simpsons episodes, and then the writing team changed. But he said this is the moment where if you go back and watch early Homer Simpsons, he was a dunce, but he wasn't a complete and utter moron. And like he used big words and he could read and stuff like that. And then there was a moment where Homer couldn't read simple words. Like he would see a word and he would mispronounce simple words. And they said it turned Homer from this sort of, you know, this dad that was struggling but was kind of doing dumb things to a complete and utter moron that was really kind of lovable for his stupidity. And he said it completely changed the character. And I thought it was pretty fascinating that somebody would be that dedicated to the show to be concerned about the change in the character of 30 years, which is likely to happen given the turnover that goes on in Hollywood.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the things that they have predicted over the year was FaceTime.
FaceTime.
A lot of people did predict, you know, video phone conferences, right?
Yeah, but I won't give them that one.
But they got the year.
They got the year right?
2010.
Okay, that's the thing. That's the thing with predictions. Like everyone's like, look at Dick Tracy with where.
Yeah.
But eventually that technology was coming somehow.
But the fact that they nailed the year.
Nailing the year is pretty good.
Homer Simpson was writing an equation that's eerily similar to the... that God particle equation.
Oh, the Higgs boson particle?
So, I mean, it's just...
Really?
Weird things like that.
What? How did they do that?
I don't know. There has to be time travel involved.
Good Lord.
So, anyways, yeah, when we find out when that episode is, I will let you know because I am really curious.
Like, when they were sitting around with the writers, did they go, everybody, we got some new writers here, introduce yourself. Hi, I'm Mark. I wrote for Family Guy. I also wrote for Tim Allen's show, and blah, blah, blah. And then they get to, like, Nancy, and she's like, hi, I'm Nancy. I was a nuclear physicist for a number of years, and I decided to get into Hollywood screenwriting. Like, how did they come? Who came up with the formula for the Higgs boson in an episode of The Simpsons? How did that? That's crazy.
I can keep
going
on.
That's not something you just land.
I can keep going on with this list of stuff, but we got time.
All right.
We're going to run out of time here.
Let's go to the bad of the day.
The bad of the day, and this one goes out to your brother.
All right, my brother.
Mike McCarthy-led Cowboys led the NFL in penalties last season, and in the first preseason game, the team was penalized 17 times.
Yeah, that was bad, man.
The really bad of it is that fans are already calling for Jerry Jones to fire Mike McCarthy after the first preseason game.
I asked my brother about that this weekend. I said, what's the deal? He goes, that's all we do is penalties. I go, you got to clean that up.
Got it.
It's going to hurt you,
somehow,
man.
Somehow, some way, but I mean.
You can't do that.
They can't do it.
How devastating. 17. The Broncos scored 17 points and the Cowboys had 17 penalties.
Right.
In a preseason game. Good
I think
God.
They had, what, 13 in the first quarter?
Yeah.
Or something.
It was crazy like that. It was first half.
It was stupid.
Ridiculous.
I mean, come on, guys.
Ridiculous.
Preseason.
Terrible. That team's going to find its. I'm telling you, they keep shooting themselves at something. I don't know what it is.
Does Mike McCarthy, does he go into the season knowing, like, it doesn't matter what I do? It
doesn't matter.
Short of winning a Super Bowl.
You better win a Super Bowl.
I'm fired at the end of the season.
Yeah, when you have Sean Payton breathing down your neck for that job, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be the worst. You contact your agent, you're like, start making silent conversations with other people.
Yep. Coordinator job, I don't care.
Do that thing where, like, I'm not here, you're not here, but let's chat a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because next year, he's going to be looking for work. Yeah, because
it's just, he's the very definition of lame duck coach.
Lame duck coach, without question.
Unless he wins a Super Bowl.
17 penalties.
I don't even know if winning a Super Bowl will do it, to be honest with you.
Maybe not. Maybe you might be right. Maybe not. Because, again, nobody believes Peyton is done, right? Like, nobody believes Sean Payton is out. Like, we think he retired to get out of New Orleans to try something else or to be the Cowboys' job. Because, like we've said many times, and you may not like the Cowboys, but you have to at least admit, being the coach of the Cowboys is different than being a coach anywhere else in the NFL. You know that when you get that job. It's a different owner. It's a different fan base. It's a different organization. It is completely different. It's a global brand. That team has got deep, deep fans around the world. If you see one of those Facebook maps of fandom, they are everywhere. They are pots of Cowboy areas around the country. They've got... It's not the same as being the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, right? I mean, it's a big deal. So I think Peyton wants a piece of that. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day, I got to give to CBS Sports Twitter site.
Okay, what did they do?
They put up a photo, and I know what their objective was.
Right.
You know, just to let's start a conversation, or let's you know, just an absurd question that you already know the answer to, but let's just see if we can get people talking about it.
Okay.
Right? So they posted this question, and they have pictures of 9 different players. All right, and before you give me your answer, Tony, I want you to think long and hard about this question.
I will.
The question is, who is the best player to play for both the Yankees and the Red Sox? And like I said, they have a picture of 9 different individuals, almost like a Brady Bunch-esque look to it, of players like Roger Clemens, Wade Boggs, Ricky Henderson, Johnny Damon. And then there's this one guy in the middle.
I'm assuming that's Babe Ruth.
Yeah. That's where I laugh, because I showed the picture to my wife, and I just said, listen, I mean, you don't know most of these players. Maybe you do recognize them. Her sports knowledge or face recognition sometimes really surprises me, shocks me. And I said, you know, but here's the question. Who's the best player to play for the Yankees and the Red Sox? She looked at the picture and goes, Babe Ruth.
Wouldn't everybody pick Babe Ruth, or did somebody go Johnny Damon?
Every answer I'm looking is this even a real question?
Okay, so who did it again? CBS Sports. Okay, so here's the thing. Could a Red Sox fan answer that question differently? I mean, Ruth was a good, really good player for the Red Sox, which is why the trade was such a big deal. So he was a good player for the Red Sox. But would a Red Sox fan go, I'm not answering Ruth because he... You know, I just don't, the curse of the Bambino, all of that. I'm taking Wade Boggs.
Right.
Like, could they just be like that defiant fan?
I mean,
I guess not. I don't know.
You have some that one person wrote down Jacoby Ellsbury. I mean, you know, just
what you're sure, right?
You know, yeah, they're trying to get the laughs.
No, of course.
But I mean, it's one of those things. That's where I get where CBS Sports was doing. I was like, oh well, let's just put this out there, and you know, it'll get lots of retweets.
Yeah, right. We'll take our lumps for putting this out there, but at least it'll hit the social media market.
People
or
will
the viral,
comment on
viral
it.
Nature. They'll yeah, exactly.
But I find this so stupid. I mean, it's like, I don't know. For me, I looked at that. I'm like, that's not even a real question.
No,
somebody else
question.
Put it down right. It said, take out Babe Ruth, take out Roger Clemens, and then re-ask the question.
That's a good question. Yeah, with outside of Babe Ruth and Roger Clemens, who do you think? That would be a better
then
question.
Then you can go, okay, you know, is it Wade Boggs?
That's a better
is
question.
Johnny Damon? David Cohn's on there. David Well. I mean, Ricky Henderson. Then you might have actual...
Yeah, right. Because you could have real debates about the influence. Like this, you know, he was great with the Red Sox, but he was disappointing with the Yankees. Or he was a great Yankee, he was disappointing with the Red Sox. Or he helped both win a World Series. Or whatever it is, you could put it in some context that's outside. Because Ruth sort of ruins everything. I mean,
no, he does. I mean,
you know,
come on.
Like you put in Ruth, and it's like, okay, 100% should be Babe Ruth.
Like I said to my wife, I said, a curse was created.
Right,
because
of
that.
Exactly.
And, you know we don't believe in curses, but that one I do believe in.
No. Well, if they got what they wanted out of it, which was viralization
and,
of that
and people
tweet,
talking about it, then good on them. But
not a good a good 9-box poll. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb for you Monday. Again, Mark Long, Associated Press, is going to join us 15 minutes to talk Jacksonville Jaguars football. Again, a season where it was a lot about Urban Meyer, a lot about the development of Trevor Lawrence, but in the end, Doug Peterson comes to town. So what it'll be like for 2022? It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, again, Mark Long joining us from the Associated Press in 11 minutes. We'll talk to him about the Jaguars. Again, you're talking about a team. Boy, it was so comical last year with Urban Meyer, but it was also sad, too. I mean, it was a team that was just falling apart with this head coach, and it was embarrassing for the organization. Shad Khan, who's a patient man, he doesn't fire coaches. He doesn't go crazy. They're not a Cleveland Browns type of organization where they went through so many coaches in a short amount of time or whatnot. He gave Doug Marrone a while, Gus Bradley a while. He gave coaches that came there enough time, you know, sort of to develop their system and to see if it would work. He's a patient man, and Urban Meyer was so embarrassing and so awful that Shad Khan didn't want to admit he made a mistake. It's one of those things too. There are coaches in this league, as many of you know, that are quick to the trigger, but then there are other owners who don't want to look stupid, right? They don't want to be like I was wrong about this guy. They kind of want to extend it and hope for the best that he works it out so that they look like they've made the right decision. And Shad Khan, I think, was a guy that didn't want to admit, like everybody was like, you got to get rid of this guy. I think he was like, well, I don't want to look like I made a huge mistake here when everybody said he wouldn't work out. And then I tried to make it work. But he had to cut Urban Meyer quick. So this was a team that had a head coach that was going no place. It wasn't taking the team anywhere. And a rookie quarterback that was trying to develop his skills, his natural skills that made him one of the surefire prospects in this league. And it just didn't work out, but that's okay. I mean, again, Trevor Lawrence had a typical rookie season. He had a season where he threw a lot of interceptions, 17 of them. That led the league, just 12 touchdowns. But he never had the big game. He never had the big moment where you went, whoa, look at these stats. Look at these numbers. But nevertheless, the team is now under a head coach that won a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback. And does coaching matter enough in this case that Jacksonville can be a team that may not go to the playoffs this year, but maybe a team that shows a lot of improvement? I'll tell you, not to get off Jacksonville for a second, but I was watching Hard Knocks with the first episode last night on the Lions. It took me a while to get to it, but I did catch the first episode. Now, don't get me wrong. I know when the cameras are rolling, you have a tendency if you know the cameras are rolling, maybe you exaggerate some emotions. I mean, that's always been the case with Hard Knocks. We've seen players do things that they don't normally do because the cameras were rolling and there was an image that they wanted to portray. But throughout the episode, and it was the first episode, so it was the start of camp, through camp, and the scrimmage that they had at Ford Field. They hadn't gotten to a preseason game yet, but it was the start of camp. Dan Campbell, every time he spoke to the team, you really got the feeling that he was all in, 100% for his guys, motivating his guys, putting them in a position to be the best they possibly can be. Even if it resulted in 3 wins last year, he was a guy that was willing to do up downs with the defense, et cetera. He has a bunch of guys on the coaching staff that were former players that are like him, a former player in the league. Deuce Staley is on the team, right? Antoine Randle L is a coach on the team. There's a bunch of coaches on the Lions. So does coaching matter on a bad team? Well, of course, from an X's and O's standpoint, but how much does the rah-rah, I believe in you, how much is that aspect important to a team that is growing and developing as a team, right? So again, a smart guy that puts the right people in the right place. Yeah, of course, we all agree that that's needed. Do you also need a cheerleader? Do you also need a motivator? Do you also need a guy that is screaming and hollering and it's hard work and grit and nobody's going to outwork us and, you know, all of those things that some coaches do? Do you need that? And is Doug Peterson that guy? Because Urban Meyer was not on the same level of like a Dan Campbell. Campbell had been in the league, so he knew how to deal with players in the league, and Urban Meyer didn't. Urban Meyer had dealt with college players, guys he could control from the moment they got on campus to the moment they graduated or left, right? He controlled everything about them. And the other thing, too, is there was one part of Hard Knocks that was really interesting was Dan Campbell's in a meeting, and he puts up pads, and he says, tomorrow we're in pads. And he gathers the players around to tell them that many of you have been questioning why we're going to shells so early. Because remember, in the collective bargaining agreement, some practices are pads, some practices are not. Aiden Hutchinson, they do a little piece on Aiden Hutchinson, and he says to his family, what's the difference between the camp at Michigan and the camp in the NFL? And he says, well, in Michigan, we were in pads all the time. He goes, here, we're in pads some days we're not. That has everything to do with the collective bargaining agreement. The union is like, no, in training camp, we're going to have some workouts without pads, some workouts with. They sort of limited it. And as a coach, you have to sort of abide by that. You have to abide by the collective bargaining agreement on how you work out your players. So Campbell he's got the team together, and he's imploring them to understand that the reason he has them in pads this early and using one of his workouts in pads early is because he said, we have done the studies, and the studies have shown that you have, in order to be prepared, it helps with injuries to be, practicing at this intensity and this loaded like this when it comes to pads. Urban Meyer never really understood that. Urban Meyer was like, rah, 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 we're going to go as hard as we can. And when they started filing complaints to the union rep, he didn't get it. He didn't get it, which really, to be honest with you, really is on Urban Meyer. Because again, when you walk into a new setting, when you walk into something where the job is similar, but it's different. It's similar in that it's coaching, it's football, it's still the game of football, but it's a new environment. He never adjusted to the new environment. Never. He thought whatever worked at Florida and Ohio State would work exactly the same way with paid NFL players who don't have the same loyalty to you as a college kid does when he chooses you to play for. Doug Peterson now gets all of that. He gets everything. So now how does it change a team that's got some talent? Does that mean they win 7 games, 8 games, or are they still a 3-win, 4-win football team? All right, so Mark Long's going to give us the lowdowns on the Jags of 2022, a little look back in 2021. We continue on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network, alongside Ron Culver Here's Tony D.
All right, let's head out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. We are on the AFC South. We're going to start this week with Jacksonville. Mark Long joins us from the Associated Press to talk about the Jaguars under new head coach Doug Peterson, but Trevor Lawrence heading in to year number two. How are you, Mark? Thanks for joining us. Always love having you, my friend.
Hey, doing well. Thanks. Good morning.
All right, so right off the bat, Doug Peterson, again, we are you know, camp, preseason game, so it's not a lot, but you've seen him since he's arrived. How different is the feel around that team since Doug Peterson took over and from last year when Urban Meyer got there?
Well, it's night and day from last year, and that's just because, you know, there's a level of professionalism, there's a level of maturity. Like, you know, Urban Meyer treated these guys like college kids, and Doug Peterson's obviously comes in and, you know, brings a ton of experience in NFL coaching and playing, and has really, as Josh Allen put it, he talks to us like we're grown men, treats us like we're grown men, and it's made a difference. It's certainly made a difference in terms of the players and how they're carrying themselves and getting through camp. They're just enjoying it a little bit more because, you know, they feel like this is what the NFL is supposed to be. And so last year was a joke. I mean, it was as bad as it could be, as bad as it was portrayed, maybe even worse than it was portrayed. And so this is a 180, and you got to wonder, the big question is, how many wins will it result in? What's going to be the difference on the field? And the belief is it'll make a difference. How big? Who knows? But it'll make a difference.
When you when you marry a rookie head coach in Urban Meyer with a rookie quarterback, all right, so there's, you know, that's difficult. But in the end, I don't know if it's a big deal, little deal, no deal, but how much did Trevor Lawrence's growth as an NFL player get kind of stunted by the fact that he didn't have around him a lot of deeply NFL professional guys to guide him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he had some pieces. I mean, Marvin Jones was a very good receiver for him last year. He had some guys on the offensive line who certainly were okay, but, you know, it definitely stunted it, no doubt. But I think the reality is he went through the year, started all 17 games, and got a feel for the NFL, got a feel for NFL defenses, got a feel for how, you know, you're going to move the ball at times in this league, how, you know, the tight spaces that you got to find, all those things. So that's got to help eventually, right? Down the road at some point, that's going to help. And as Trevor points out, he says, I'm light years ahead of where I was this time last year, mostly because, you know, it's like once you've learned one offense, it's really easy to learn another offense in the NFL because, you know, the plays are the same, the defenses are the same, just the terminology is really all he's changing. So he thinks that he's going to, you know, make this huge year two jump, and a lot of second-year quarterbacks do make a big jump. I think more than anything, it's the pieces he has around him. Last year, he had very few legitimate NFL pieces. This year, he's got a lot more.
In terms of the things that you did like from him, I mean, it's easy to look at some rookie numbers and go, ah, typical rookie year. But what did you like about some of the things he was able to do when he did shine?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a ton of mobility. I mean, he doesn't look, you know, he says he's pretty slow for guys his size. He's got the big arm. He's obviously a big dude, got the long hair. He looks the part, acts the part. He really handles himself well. But I think more than anything is he's much more mobile than anybody thought. So he's able to, you know, if the offensive line breaks down, he's able to, you know, scramble enough, move enough in the pocket to create some time. So he's unbelievably athletic, unbelievably mobile. We're not talking about, you know, Lamar Jackson here, but we're certainly talking about for a guy his size and for a quarterback in this position in the NFL, for an average quarterback in the NFL, he moves really well. So that part gives him a chance when you're talking about, you know, all the things that can happen in a game. So that part gives him a chance. Super smart. And then you look at the progress he made. It wasn't great. The numbers don't lie, but you go back and you look at once they got rid of Urban Meyer, once they kind of settled down after that, you look at his last game against Indianapolis at home, and he really, really made some strides, didn't turn the ball over, two touchdown passes, scrambled a little bit, unbelievable play in that game to score a touchdown. So you look at that game and you go, okay, now then, that's the starting point. You start from there, and you start building on that. You bring in, you know, a quarterback, kind of a quarterback-friendly coach in Doug Peterson, and you think that this guy's really got a chance.
So they did invest in the offseason to some weapons for him. There, here comes Zay Jones, Evan Ingram, Christian Kirk. Talk about the additions that he has now and how much that has been working so far in camp.
Yeah, those are the big three. And let's not forget about Travis Etienne. This was a first-round pick a year ago, a guy he's super comfortable with from their 3 years together in Clemson. Travis Etienne, running back, the ACC's all-time leading rusher, missed all of last season with a foot injury, Lisfranc injury, and he is back, and he looks better than ever. I mean, he's been unbelievable in camp. He's been unbelievable in the offseason, and that's going to be, that's another piece. So you talk about Christian Kirk being a guy who, you know, can be his number one. Marvin Jones has probably lost his step at 32 years old. Zay Jones is the deep threat, guy who can take the top of the defense off. Evan Ingram's going to be kind of his security blanket. And then Travis Etienne, who's a matchup nightmare coming out of the backfield. Those four guys added into the mix. And again, they had some pieces before. Jamal Agnew, Laviska Shenault, good four and five receivers in this league. Another tight end, Dan Arnold. He's got pieces across the board to get this thing done. And, you know, it's not going to be, we're not going to be sitting here in November, December and saying, you know, the reason the Jags didn't succeed is because Trevor Lawrence doesn't have enough around him. He's got enough around him, no question about it.
Is this offense going to be tight end heavy like it was in Philadelphia? You love to use the tight ends with the Eagles. Will you do the same thing here?
Yeah, that's the plan. The question is, you know, how good are the tight ends? I mean, Dan Arnold's a pretty good move tight end. Evan Ingram's a pretty good move tight end. But, you know, they're good, but they're, you know, neither of them is Zach Ertz. And then the depth behind them is still pretty young. So he probably doesn't have what he had in Philly, especially his last year there when he had Goddard and Ertz. But, you know, they're serviceable. And if Evan Ingram can stay healthy and catch the ball, I mean, the guy's got unbelievable talent, unbelievable speed, and is going to be, you know, another one of those tight end matchup problems for defenses.
Let's get to the defensive side of the ball. Trayvon Walker was the number one draft pick overall. That's a kid they're bringing in from Georgia. Did they get some free agent acquisitions on that side as well?
Yeah, you know what? I just raved about the offense, but I actually feel better about the defense.
Nice.
And that's the crazy thing, especially when you're talking about a team that's won four games in 2 years. I mean, you know, by all regards, this defense, this team should be devoid of talent, but that is not the case. They really do. They've really done pretty wonders on that defensive side of the ball, and they've dominated through camp. They have dominated the offense. Trevor Lawrence has had his spots here and there, but for the most part, overall, the defense looks way ahead of the offense. And so the pieces, they've done a two-year rebuild on that side of the ball. Last year, they brought in Roy Robertson-Harris, Shaquille Griffin, Rayshon Jenkins, a safety, Shaquille Griffin, a cornerback, Roy Robertson-Harris and Malcolm Brown, both interior guys. And so those guys were kind of, you know, they probably did not develop like they should have in that defensive scheme. I think everybody looks at last year and just says, what a debacle. They were probably lucky to win three games. And then, you know, you take those guys, and now they added Foley Fatukasi, a big mammoth defensive tackle from the Jets. They added Foye Olukun, who was the NFL's leading tackler last year for the Atlanta Falcons at middle linebacker. So they think he's going to be a fantastic addition. Darius Williams, cornerback from the Rams, they added him. And then, you know, throw on some of the draft picks that they've folded in the mix. I mean, Josh Allen's still on his rookie contract. Trayvon Walker's certainly going to help him. Devin Lloyd, another first-round draft pick from last year. They look at this defense and they look at every piece across the board and they think, okay, this thing is set. They really feel like it. They have no weaknesses on the defensive side of the ball, and the front seven going to be as good as anybody in their division, they feel like. So, and that's saying a lot. So defensively, I think they've got a lot of pieces. Now, they don't have a lot of depth, but when you look at the starting 11, the front line guys, they feel like they can line up on paper and be as good as anybody in the AFC.
I never like to ask about predictions because I don't think there's an easy answer, and it seems just kind of too easy when we do these previews. But I do want a big picture feeling from you, Mark, about this team, because I like what I'm reading. I like what you're saying. in terms of this, of what you think this team will be week in and week out, is this now a team that, hey, they may not win nine games, but my God, they're a lot, they're going to be a tougher out than they've been in the last few years?
Yeah, that's exactly where, what they're going to be. They're going to be a tough out week in and week out. They've got the pieces. They really do. Are they, you know, are they maybe, you know, do they, are they missing maybe one or two home run hitters? Sure. They don't have, you know, what the Rams have, right, in terms of on both sides of the ball. But they got guys they feel like are growing or can grow into those roles. And if that happens, if that happens and it happens quickly, if Trevor Lawrence becomes what people, the generational quarterback people think he can be, if Trayvon Walker is as good as advertised, if, you know, it's like a lot of ifs, but if all these pieces come together, no one should be surprised if the Jags, you know, take a big leap this season and start turning the corner. This is not going to be the Jags from 10 years ago or the 15 years ago or even 2 years ago or 3 years ago. This is a different team that looks like it's built, that really looks like it's built to make a run, a sustained run in this AFC South for sure.
Mark, great stuff as always. Love having you on, my friend. Hope to get you on during the season, my man. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thank you.
You got it. Mark Long, Associated Press in Jacksonville, helping us preview the Jaguars. And like I said, again, I don't ask these guys to give me a record. I don't ask these guys to say, oh, I think they'll be 6-10. But I think in certain circumstances, it is good to point overall, what is the feeling of this? And I think for what he said was right. This is a team that's won four games in 2 years. 2 years, four games, three last year, one the year before. It has been an organization, a franchise, in just complete turmoil and a mess, and they made the wrong choice with Urban Meyer. They made the wrong choice. Now, you could argue, like some did at the time, Urban Meyer was a fine selection that ended up not working out. And there were some that said, this guy ain't going anywhere near being a good coach at the next level. He's got too much arrogance, too much hubris. When he gets there, he's not going to change. He's not going to adapt to the pro game like we've seen some college coaches do when they get to the next level, where they wake up and go, okay, I got to learn a new way of how do I treat these guys? How do I conduct meetings? How do I abide by the professional rules that are now in place rather than I'm the king and I'm the emperor and everybody else is a subject to my kingdom? Urban Meyer never did that. He never did that. And it's surprising in a way because he should have been smart enough to have seen it. He should have been smart enough to have seen other college coaches fail trying to do it the old college way. But he believed in his own hype. But is this team now with the right coach, better coaches that are lined up with Doug Peterson, and they went out and said, we got problems here, 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 and here, and they went out and got some free agency fixes for them. He's right. They may not have the depth, but they should be a tougher opponent for teams. I don't think you're going to say when your team plays Jacksonville, oh, yeah, that'll be a piece of cake. They'll have that thing wrapped up at halftime. I think they'll be tougher. You probably will still win the game, but I think it'll be a tougher out. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. Thanks to Mark Long of Jacksonville as we continue our previews this week. We've got Tennessee, Houston, and Indianapolis coming up. The new Indianapolis Colts with Matt Ryan at quarterback. And for the first time since last year, the Colts have a new quarterback. How many quarterbacks have they had four in 4 years? Maybe if you want to go, yeah,
I guess so.
Yeah, so maybe 5 in 5 years?
I mean,
I'm not going to look this up.
They went from a team that had two quarterbacks only for what?
Right, for a while.
15
right?
years.
Except for that one little year off.
Right.
So they could, like, where Kerry Collins was their quarterback tanking games so they could get Andrew Luck. But, yeah, like, so it was, so could you say 5 in 5 years? Because Andrew Luck, there was a full season of Andrew Luck, and then just before the start of the 2018 season, he retired. So then it was what? Who was their quarterback? Jacoby Brissett? Back then, somebody took over
that
job.
Great question.
Right. So somebody was the Colts quarterback that year, and then it was Philip Rivers, Carson Wentz, and now Matt Ryan. So you've had five quarterbacks there in 5 seasons in Indianapolis. And then we got the Texans, who are now under Lovie Smith. Then you've got the Tennessee Titans, the team that went had the number one seed in the AFC, only to lose to the Cincinnati Bengals at home to open up the playoff run. So that's our AFC South week. Do I think Jacksonville is going to win more than three games? Yeah, I think they'll win more than three games. I don't think they'll win more than, let's say, seven. But I think they'll be a better team. Yeah, big, you know. But what a franchise, right? Right? Didn't we talk about this one time before? If you look, how many times has the Jacksonville Jaguars drafted in the top five? Like, all the time. And none of those guys are around anymore? Like, hardly any of them are around? Like, obviously, Trevor Lawrence is still there, and they just signed Trayvon. But look at the top five, top ten picks that they've had in the draft and how many are still on that team. They've never built anything with the picks. Nothing. It's a weird franchise because it's either A, not run correctly, or B, they don't know how to draft. Because, you know, and they've drafted some good players, really good players that have worked well in other teams. But they have not been able to implement them in a way that keeps them there, builds something strong, continues. I mean, you got like Jalen Ramsey going, I need out of here now. Get me out of here now. Yeah, it's been a weird, weird organization. But maybe Doug Peterson rights the ship. All right, coming up, we got hour number three. We'll talk some baseball with Steve Gardner, including the Fernando Tatis suspension and why it's the same old story, different guy. We continue. It's Wake Up Call.